My name is Zephyr Thrull. You're listening to Frank Prattle. My special guests today are artist Ryan McNamara and gallerist Elizabeth D. Hi, guys. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Very well. Thank you.
Fantastic. Why don't you guys just tell a little bit about who you are and what it is that you do? Elizabeth, you want to start?
Sure. I've been a gallerist since 1998. I've had the gallery here under my own name since 2002 on at 545 West 20th Street in Chelsea, on the ground floor. And I represent 18 international artists, Ryan McNamara being one of the newest artists to our program. I'm very honored to be working with him. And, yeah.
Sounds good. Ryan?
My name is Ryan McNamara. I'm an artist. I started off working in photography, but then just got more excited about the experience of making the photograph and being with people, and so I've been for years now working more with performance for the video camera. There you go.
Sounds good. You know, the way that I came about asking to do this interview was I came and saw a show here at Elizabeth D called Introducing Ryan McNamara, which is, a fairly standard idea. You know, a gallery picks up a new artist, and then they're like, do something so people get to know you. But I've never seen it done quite this way. tell me a little bit about this show that you guys put together.
Well, I mean, the funny thing is you've never seen something like that, but it's actually sort of the most literal way of introducing yourself is by introducing yourself. Exactly that. Elizabeth came to me and said, we want to do a project that introduces you to the gallery audience. And so I said, well, great. I will do that for 5 days. Introduce myself to the gallery audience. So I was in the space for all of the 5 days with literally surrounded by my life, starting with baby photos, working through awkward teen years, beginning of my life as an artist and my angsty, bad black and white photos from my teenage years, and then moving into the projects I've been working on in the past few years. I think the interesting thing is, though, is that, you know, that the personal photos kind of dropped out after a certain point, and I thought that was kind of interesting. I said, oh, because my projects have become my personal photos because I work with my friends a lot and things like that. So there is a seamlessness to it. It's just kind of, you know, the photos I take now, you know, are just a little more, they've just gotten more bizarre, so.
Elizabeth, when you said, you know, come up with something to introduce yourself, and Ryan shot that back, what was your first take? First blush?
I always have thought about the potential of working with Ryan and collaborating with him as an artist, and also the opportunity to engage performance with this generation in the gallery as an envelope, as something that I wanted to investigate with Ryan. And so what's clear to me, and what has been clear to me from just working with Ryan, we first met at X Initiative when I was a curator for the Performa Biennial. We were part of the consortium for Performa with Rosalie Goldberg. So working with Ryan in that context, what struck me the most about his work was that he has this engagement with the audience that's so participatory, that really expands one's notion of how performance has worked traditionally. And so I knew that whatever Ryan would do in the gallery would involve that audience. So, you know, it was really, a connection that we had both made that might happen at the gallery at some point. And the timing seemed perfect because Ryan was preparing for Greater New York, which is now happening, and also for this project he's doing at Basel at Lista. And we wanted to be able to bring those projects to our audience, and we wanted to form a grounding for our audience before doing so. So it was a nice beginning.
One of the things that I see specifically about this performance that I really enjoyed is that so often, you know, when you go into a gallery, specifically in Chelsea here in New York, there's somebody sitting behind the desk. They don't look at you. Mm-hmm. They don't say anything to you. There's art on the walls. Oftentimes, there's no numbers, nothing. You know, definitely, you know, except for a few galleries, maybe Mary Boone, there's no prices. There's just this art shot out into a blank white space that you're just supposed to know about already, that you have this preternatural knowledge that, you know, oh, yes, that's that. Of course. But this was really the antithesis of that show with the artist. You know, I remember I walked in and you shook my hand and you were like, oh, you're just in time. come right over. And then essentially took me on a tour of your, you know, a full tour of your life, actually before your life, starting with your grandparents right. and what they did. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how refreshing that is, you know, but also interesting in the aspect of, you know, you really get to see the awkward years as well. The years where you're like, wait, that wasn't a very good project. You know? talk to me a little bit about how that was, like really kind of bearing your history, you know, your best face and some of your least favorites or less favorites.
Well, I definitely did not want it to be, you know, Ryan's greatest hits, you know. I mean, it is not... I mean, in a way, I love how hilarious it is that I'm just starting the gallery and it's almost a retrospective, you know, but I mean, usually a retrospective, you edit, you know, yeah. And I really did just throw everything, and there was not a piece that I said, oh, that's too embarrassing. I mean, there were some where I was like, okay, as I put it on the wall, all right, we're doing this, we're doing it. But in a way, you know, a lot of the audience... I mean, a lot of galleries, a lot of people come to the art world a lot because they start off as artists. A lot of gallerists, a lot of, you know, people in the art world fell in love with art by making work. And so I thought it was important to show that stuff almost because I knew everyone had something like that, you know. And so not necessarily they're going to have this revelatory moment with the piece itself, because it wasn't that good of a piece. But it could be this kind of like, oh, yes, I remember doing that. I remember my version of that. And so, you know, in a way, I also, it's just about kind of like, I mean, artists, they're people, you know? I mean, like, we have good days, we have bad days. And I think one of the most hilarious things about the art world is how the artist... can become dehumanized in a way, you know. I mean, it's like they're a name in vinyl letters on the wall, and you know, when you go see artist lectures, it's kind of this very particular version of history, you know, their history. It's their greatest hits, you know, and so they come off sounding amazing. And I mean, I guess because I am in my work so much, it's like, well, my life has not been, like, it's not like I have the Midas touch, you know? Yeah. And so to kind of really introduce myself, warts and all, was really important to me, you know? Or it was actually kind of boring.
What would you say the project that embarrassed you most upon?
Let's see. Looking. Well, you know, I mean, there was a thing with the first black and white photographs I did that were embarrassing, but there's a detachment.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, obviously they're just bad, you know. I mean, I was 15, you know, and so there's a few projects. God, what am I? I'm trying to think. It's kind of like the back wall, if you remember, had like okay projects, you know, like those are almost more embarrassing just because they're almost there, you know. It's like when it's just terrible and you're a teenager, no one's gonna blame you for making bad work, you know. I was in Arizona, you know. I just. Impressed that I was just, you know, not stuck in front of TV, you know. So it's just like, none of them were terrible. I don't have one that I was like, oh, God, you know. I mean, there were projects that...
A mother loves all her babies.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, sorry, I'm not even saying that. But, and also I do, I have, a lot of my projects do involve an experience with them. And I don't regret anything I've made, you know. There are projects that I didn't talk about unless someone specifically asked about it.
They're like, what about that?
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, okay. All right, we'll go there, you know. And so specifically, God, I'm trying to think which... It's like there were so many. I think it's more just kind of the awkwardness of that back wall, you know, which was like... work that I totally see tied to the work I do now, but just not formed, you know?
Right. it's good.
And also the other thing that I think is really fantastic about the project's evolution is that it became so widely known that we had, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people, you know, by the end of this period of 1 week. And as a result, now hundreds of people who are in the art community have the perspective that maybe only a gallerist or someone very close to the artist would have about an artist's practice. You know, like you were saying, the privileged position that one is in, being on the inside of the gallery system, working directly with artists, is now being given away. And now every time Ryan does something, there's an opportunity for, you know, the person who worked at Print and Matter who got a personal tour, or a curator at another museum to you know, see that as additive to a much larger understanding of Ryan's work and how he's evolving and what his history is. So it was really interesting to see that take place in the gallery.
It's been funny because, you know, I don't know what it's been, a month, month and a half since that project. And so I'll be talking to people and I'll say, oh, well, you know, just in conversation, say, oh, yeah, you know, actually when I was 20, I had a gallery, something like that. They're like, yeah, we know. And I'm like, oh, right. Like,
this is such a good work.
Right. And it's blah, blah, blah. And this happened there, and this happened there. I'm like, oh, right. Wow. This is sort of, what do I talk about now? You
know? So one of the things that I really, really struck me was the performance that you guys did at Performa. Mm-hmm. And that was, just to get the name right, I think it was Any Fag Could Do That, and then
a bunch of names. All right, so it started off with, it is Sacred Band of Thieves, a.k.a. In Memory of Robert Isabel, a.k.a. Any Fag Could Do That.
Title. Just a
right,
just
yeah,
a
exactly. Well, I liked all three titles, and so I'm just...
Yeah, it's your project, weren't you?
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, it's become Sacred Band. Well, it depends who you are. It's either Sacred Band of Thieves to some people, but then other people call it Any Fag Could Do That. You know, yeah.
And this, you know, for those listening, was a massive project here in Chelsea, in New York, and at this place called X Initiative, which is no longer there, I don't believe.
No, it's X Initiative was a initiative of the international art community for 1 year that took place at the former Dia Center for the Arts on West 22nd Street.
And so is Dia taking it back then as well? I'd heard.
No, it's not. Dia had sold the building in 2007. It had remained empty.
Oh, okay.
So it was a imagination in a way, a reconfiguration of the use of that building. It was something that was much more immediate, and it was a series of projects and programs that we cited there with a wide variety of individuals from different parts of the country and also the world, who brought wonderful projects there. And we were very involved with Performa during the biennial, and that was the context that Ryan came in to do a project with us.
Right. Yeah. And then I believe it was 40 men along uh-huh. that line, mm-hmm. All fairly young, athletic, good-looking, dressed in togas or less, and... in a massive performance with people swamping the floor, and tell us a little bit about it.
Well, it came off of... Actually, I hope you don't mind me telling this,
no.
But Elizabeth came and did it. This is how we met.
This is how we met.
Was with a studio visit in August. Happened very quickly, you know, and this is the thing that I love about X Initiative, is because it was a year long project. It was like bam, 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 one thing after the other. And, you know, they were like, you know, while one show was up, they were planning the next one, you know, I mean, very unlike a museum that spends years planning a project. There's a real vibrancy to right. X Initiative. Which also keeps you on your toes if you're one of the artists working at X Initiative, which I love. So we did it. We did a studio visit, and she said, "Well, I would love for you to be a part of X Initiative's involvement with Performa. I just need a blurb in a day.
I
thrive on things like that because it's like, well, you have to basically make a piece about what is on your mind at that very moment. Well, I just returned from Greece. And I had, you know, being sort of the Wikipedia addict that I am, if I go to Greece, I like just end up spending like 4 hours on Wikipedia looking at every aspect of Greece. So I had stumbled upon the page of the Sacred Band of Thebes, which was an elite force of the Theban army that was based on the idea of the army of lovers. So it was made up completely of male lovers because Socrates believed that if you were fighting next to your lover, you'd fight harder, fight stronger to defend this person versus, you know, these anonymous people who just are fighting for the same goal but don't have a personal relationship. The thing that I love about it is that it actually worked. The sacred band...
Damn that, Socrates.
I know, right? the sacred band defeated the... Spartan army, which was 3 times their size. So I just loved this idea of these really kind of ferocious, you know, fags. You know, and so, you know, and but it really made me think about this, you know, I love gay culture. I embrace all of it. I love like the Nelly Queens in movies, you know, from the 50s. But, you know, one thing that I think people forget is that it's a really, you know, like many marginalized group. It's like a fierce group who has fought adversity, who has fought AIDS, who has fought, you know what I mean? So I thought that the Sacred Band was really kind of this early symbol, you know, kind of like forefathers to this community that's really had to fight. You know, and so I also liked the idea that, you know, one of the things about New York at the moment is there's a lot of looking back. Like, oh, I've heard it so many times. Oh, God, you should have been here in the 70s. You should have been here in the 80s. You should have been here in the 90s. That's when things were really happening. And I just thought, like, no, I know amazing people in New York at this moment, you know, and I want to bring them all into this project. And so that's the way it happened. So I started off with, you know, emailing, I don't know, I probably sent out 15 emails and then it grew and then it grew and then it grew. So there was people I'd never met before in the piece. My best friends were in the piece. And so it was, I mean, there was a celebratory aspect to it, you know, and I also wanted to, you know, really have people feel ownership of it. So there was like very minor moments of choreography that I imposed on the piece. I worked with the individual groupings of people, but they came up with their own choreography. I basically just told them I want you to have something that involves attraction and aggression. And was totally amazed by the way that people took that and really ran with it. And then we really only performed it together. You know, 40 people in New York. It's like, you can't get them together. I mean, I can't believe I got them together for one night. So we'd never all done it together until that night, which really added an excitement to it, added, you know, so many unknowns. And I mean, this is what I love about performance. You know, it's like, why, if you're going to rehearse the hell out of it, just make a video. You know, like,
yeah. It's, or, you know, a movie.
Right, yeah, well, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, this is like, you know, I'm selfish. I want it to be an exciting thing for me as well. So I want to learn things while it's happening. I want to have a real experience. And, you know, so that was one way of keeping it live and fresh for me. I had no idea it was going to happen. You know, I mean, I was afraid, you know. I mean, we had smaller groups that would come in and use the space and things like that. And these two guys came in and, you know, they were kind of tumbling around and throwing each other around. And then one of them kind of through the other one and broke one of the columns. I'm like, oh god, you know, like there's gonna be, you know, a lot of people in here. What is gonna happen? Are we gonna like have all these injuries, or like bodies gonna be thrown onto the audience? And luckily nothing really happened. I think a few people got swatted and things like that, but I mean, you know,
I think I saw Jerry Saltz almost get stepped
out. I mean, but this is performance, you know what I mean? That's like, that's why I do performance and not theater, is because I want, there's like this element of the unknown, because in a way this piece also, you know, the performers were also somewhat, they were almost the audience as well, because there were so many of them and they hadn't seen the piece. No one had seen the piece. And so the idea of like the audience, performer, you know, divide sort of blurred. I mean, we were wearing costumes, so it was obvious who was set up. And you know, I mean, so I'm not saying that it was like participatory in that way, but for the performers themselves, you know, they had no idea what was going to happen. So you know, everyone just sort of got into this trance. It was an out of body experience, really, for a lot of us.
I remember it being like there being parts that were extremely violent, and then parts that were super sexy and seductive and very, you know, very smooth and mm-hmm. you know, gentle, things like that. But then, like the interplay of them all, it was just a candy land for the, you know, observers sitting down, and the performers were like, you know, weaving in and out of the audience
right.
on the floor, and it was something else, yeah.
Many people had said to me, you know, after and even now, that it's still one of the most vibrant performative experiences they've had, you know, where you feel physically transfixed and transformed by being in that space, and that you, the energy of 40 men interacting in this way was just extremely both primal and striking, like on like a very deep level, and it stayed with people. And the idea of diffusing, you know, the artist is present tradition in performance, and really giving it the gesture, I think, of Ryan as an artist engaging and giving time and organizing community and letting that be the performance. And, you know, the mythology of the Sacred Band of Thieves was such a perfect kind of, you know, fit in a way, in terms of harnessing some of the ideas that, you know, we're seeing Ryan do now at Greater New York and other projects. So it really did bring a larger audience to an understanding of what Ryan's been doing for a while.
Yeah. One of the things that that is happening here, you know, kind of mid-thigh in the recession as we are at the moment, is that many galleries have moved away from more experimental, more challenging things, mm-hmm. and really kind of gone back to the safe breast of blue chip, mm-hmm. You know, flipping Lichtensteins and things like that, you know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things I was hoping to talk about is your gallery, Elizabeth, seems to be definitely moving not in that direction.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Which is exciting, which is good, you know?
The irony is that I did grow up flipping Lichtenstein, so I do know how to do that. That's my early formative background. And so, you know, and I agree with you. I think you've hit the nail on the head. I mean, there's a real decision that's being made by gallerists at this stage, and about how to move forward with their practice and survive in this really turbulent economy. And it became clear to me that, especially in watching the next generation, Ryan's generation, come up. I mean, we have three artists who were born after 1980 who have joined the gallery in the last 4 years. Ryan Trecarton was the first, and Ryan McNamara and Amir Magrabi were the second and third. And I've been very influenced by my conversations with their conversations with me about what interests them in terms of representation and finding opportunities for the work and building a broader understanding for the work. And it became clear to me that in order to do that effectively, particularly for these artists that I think are true visionaries of their time, that the gallery had to move in tandem with their ideas. And sometimes the gallery is a perfect envelope for that, and sometimes it's beyond the gallery. So I've been involved in the last 3 years even before the recession began, just really reimagining the gallery as a practice in a little bit more thorough way with this next generation in mind and this relationship to performance. You know, we have four generations at the gallery in performance. We have Adrian Piper, who we've represented from the beginning.
Who's close to my heart.
Yeah, close to my heart as well, and is one of the reasons I'm even here as a gallerist, was my, you know, her inspiration. You know, she was an inspiration to me. And then, you know, moving forward, Alex Bagg, who also I think is an icon in terms of performance-based video and its connection to different aspects of the artistic condition. And then moving forward to Harry Dodge and Stanya Khan, who were a collaborative for 4 years and made, I think, some of the most social and politically dynamic work in performance-based video.
And work that both my mother and I can watch at the same time and enjoy.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that's so good to know.
Which is almost, I mean, it's like Van Gogh and those two. You know what I mean?
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, that is, I know that they would be thrilled to learn
she
that.
Does.
I'm going to have to tell them.
We watch on Ubu sometimes together, yeah.
Good. Yeah. Ubu's a great site, yeah. And you know, and also working with particularly performance-based video opened up a big conversation about how is work really you know, distributed, and we are have taken a position here at the gallery that broad distribution is important. It doesn't devalue the editions of the work necessarily. And for each of these cases, we worked very closely with Kenny at Ubu, and also we're very involved with EAI, Electronic Arts Intermix, who we think is an amazing organization that's building an awareness of performance through documentation of video. What I'm now seeing, just to, you know, move from like Harry and Stanya or Alex Bagg's generation to the next generation, which Ryan McNamara is, I think, central to, is this idea of, and we were just talking about this morning at breakfast, the something that actually Marina Abramović talked about last night at the dinner in her honor at MoMA, is the future of performance is in the immaterial. And I think the future of the gallery, to a certain degree, is in embracing that immateriality. So you have the Lichtensteins that are, you know, blue chip and bankable and transferable on one end of the spectrum, and you have the complete unknown that involves trust and leaps of faith and a new way of collecting that we are cultivating here with philanthropists rather than collectors. And we've had conversations with even Ryan's collectors, you know, at this early stage about those topics. And we're committed, you know, Ryan and I in our collaboration, to developing that together in a real true collaborative sense. And that's really where my practice as a gallerist dovetails with his his practice as an artist. And, you know, he needs to be there for me to exist, certainly, but it's also nice to really work very closely together on some of these larger issues that are really at the heart of his work. So that's what we're doing now, is really working toward that.
So let's say, I mean, these are good words, right? These sound amazing. But oftentimes when it comes down to brass tacks,
yes.
Like you had a show, you didn't sell anything, I'm furious, or something like along those lines, or, you know, it wasn't, what can I sell out of this? This is a commercial world, you know. This,
of course, right. And we have, without financial viability, right. We can't do what we do.
Right.
None of us can afford to get up in the morning and go and have this very privileged life that we feel honored and lucky to be able to support this evolution of our culture. The nice thing is that projects with Ryan bring up these questions. And so it gives us an opportunity to talk about them. And we are always in dialogue. And it's been so fascinating and fruitful for me. And it's really changed a lot of the ways that I've previously thought about being a dealer. And so, of course, when it was introducing Ryan McNamara, the idea was, what is the work here? And oftentimes when collectors would come in, that was the first question of, like, how do I define it through the value system? And
right.
And we had prepared for that question. And it gave us an opportunity to talk about things that had been interesting to us to think about conceptually. And I'm happy to also say that we sold the entire show.
Congratulations to both of you.
But not just as a document and not just as an archive, although it is certainly a very ambitious archive of everything Ryan has made to date.
Do you mean that you sold family photos, everything?
Yes. Ooh, not only that, it's a performance.
Right.
The whole thing is one work. And so that's something that, I don't know if you want to talk about that more, Ryan.
Yeah, so basically as part of this piece is that, you know, the collector now gets tours. You know, and so that's part of it. You know, I think that's, you know, it's a way of it's really the activation of what is really just my, you know, cross-country photo, you know, from high school is the performative element to it. And so, I mean, I love that people are going on this journey with us, you know, I mean, because it is...
So, kind of clarify for the audience. You would install this in a collector's space?
Well, it's, you know, I mean, right, it's an archive. Right. So, you know, but when, you know, we would arrange a time, if they, you know, I don't know, they have friends from out of town or something.
All right.
And they want a tour, you know, we just need to arrange a time. So give me a call.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And I'll give them a tour. So that's part of what they bought.
See, that definitely is different for envisioning how, you know, performance works.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, I love giving the tour, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, I feel very lucky that this piece will live on, you know, that I'll be able to continue doing this. And I think it'll be interesting if, you know, what if they ask me to do this in 20 years?
Exactly. So is there a time limit then?
There is a precursor to this, which, you know, is it's kind of this, you know, this fun thing that I did with my friend, but it really is a piece, which was in the show, which was it's called Black Eye, and I gave a friend of mine. The story goes is that I asked a friend of mine how she was doing, and she said, you know, I feel like I have a black eye. I wish I had a black eye, because if I had a black eye, people would be nicer to me. And I said, well, you know, I know how to give you a black eye with makeup. And so
with makeup?
Yeah, right. I promise. Yeah, it didn't hurt. I know a way of doing it. Yeah, I'm not going to hate you. That's a different kind of performance. So we, you know, we got to talking about it. And she said, I said, you know what? Like, I want to sell you a performance. In which I will give you a black eye for the rest of your life. You just need to call me and we'll arrange it. And I sold. That was actually the first performance I sold. And, you know, Elizabeth and I have decided that's an addition of three. So one has already been sold, but if, you know, anyone wants, there's two more. So if anyone else wants a black eye for the rest of their life, it's out there. It follows that model. I mean, the nice thing is that I like doing these things, and I am curious, what does it mean? You know, they bought this sort of chapter of my life.
Right.
How fascinating to give a tour of this chapter of my life in 20 years.
Right.
You know, I mean, it really keeps the piece alive for me, too, so.
Ooh, I like that. one of the things that really interests me, and Elizabeth, you definitely, I think, have an interest in this as well, are artists now, such as yourself, Ryan, bringing in different elements of, you know, of theater, of dance, of things like this, stuff that used to be fairly separated in artistic world standards. You know, there was kind of your Marina Abramovich's, Bruce Nauman's, like, one camera in I'm going to do something crazy against the wall, Bergen style.
Right.
You know? And then that kind of faded away, you know, to come back later, whatever. But now incorporating entire sets, makeup, you know, very explosive things in public. Tell me who some of your inspirations are for things like that.
Well, I mean, I think that there actually has been these cycles that have happened where there is more dialogue between the visual art world and, say, dance. You know, I mean, I think one person who's central to this was Merce Cunningham, you know, well, and John Cage. I mean, you know, John Cage, you know, within the community around him was every type of artist, you know, was in this community. And they had this organic idea. They're just like, well, we should make something together. So, you know, Robert Rauschenberg would work with, you know, with Merce. And, you know, I mean, so these, it was just, the world was kind of smaller. And so, you know, it wasn't that I was off, you know, off in Chelsea doing art, and you were, you know, at Lincoln Center making your dance, and, you know, I mean, it's just, they were all thinkers together, and so, you know, the art world grew, the world grew, and so the visual art world, I feel, had, you know, became its own universe, and it became a little, for my taste, a little hermetic, you know. And that's not the way my life works. It's not that I only know visual artists. And so I was talking to these people, and I loved these people. But, you know, those divides really did exist. One thing that I really hope to do with Sacred Band of Thieves is that it was almost half visual artists and half dancers. And one of the, you know, reasons that I did is just to get those people in the same room together. Mm-hmm. Because it is, it's a different New York than it used to be. You know, we all don't live in the East Village. We all don't get to, you know, have a 4-hour lunch with each other on a Wednesday. You know, I mean, it's like it really takes effort to get together because we have jobs, because, you know, this one lives in Crown Heights and the other person lives in Inwood. And, you know, so, I mean, there is this, it's just different, but I just want, you know, there is still community here. You know, I make pieces in which it's all these people come together, you know, and that's important to me. That's why I live in New York. You know, the pieces I make, I couldn't do anywhere else. You know, I mean, yeah. This is just, it's still the best city in the world. It's just that...
You say that like it's passing, though. Do you think that we've passed the kind of... are we experiencing the Paris of 19, you know, of... I don't know, 39 or something, sort of, where it's like, we're like, still the top.
I think that people love giving an obituary on New York.
Yes.
You know, they love
as a whole pastime.
Well, I was just talking about that. I was saying, you know, like, oh, well, New York in the 60s, New York in the 70s, that's when New York was New York. I mean, it's a constant. It's just a constant in the you know, conversation around New York. I love the city. I love the people who live here now. You know, that includes people who were here in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. But it's, you know, there's still such a vibrant community here. It just doesn't look the same. You know, you can't just walk into a cafe in Greenwich Village and, oh, there's the art community. It just doesn't work that way anymore because it's so huge. But it's important for me to have these, you know, a lot of it happens. It's just less visible because it's happening in these small groups here and there and all over the place. And so, in a way, some of my projects, I just want to kind of make it visible in an institution, you know, and be like, look, we are all doing this, you know? I mean, that's sort of part of my project for Greater New York at PS1 is, you know, making what happens usually behind closed doors happen visibly, so...
So for yourself, you know, when you experience projects such as Ryan's, and what excites you about his, you know, what interests you in his work, you know, and ideas of community and things like that.
In terms of the content, I think it's, you know, really, I feel so honored to be part of the art community and to be able to do what I do as a gallerist here, and. It's something that I'm also interested in the relationship of how work gets translated to the audience, because that's primarily what I do as a cultural producer, is I set up these situations and I observe their success or failure or both, and I'm really interested in how that can not only grow and evolve and become more successful for what artists are truly thinking and what they want to achieve with these projects, but also just in terms of how the community addresses them and the larger topics around them. And that interest goes back to my own practice as a gallerist and how I'm reimagining the possibilities for the future role of my profession, certainly, too. And that's definitely at the heart of things for me. And with Ryan, we've been able to achieve a lot in a very short period of time in that regard. You know, with, you know, being able to, you know, place and position this kind of massively ambitious work that was here in the gallery in one collection that also lives on as a performance is extraordinary. And it's an opportunity that I wouldn't have quite the same way with other artists who are working differently. So I like the sense of community in regard to that. But I also like the sense of collaboration that his work really brings to light. I mean, with this particular collector, we're really now have brought him into a system of questioning about right. about what it means to steward this as mm-hmm. as an archive, as a personal document, as you know, kind of a complete survey of the evolution of work to this point, and all that's been really great.
They also get to be like a set director as well, because they're like, where am I going to put this production? You know what I mean?
There is, and these questions are so important. And they, the more we have these conversations with people in the community who are committed to having them on a variety of levels, it opens up the possibility for moving forward. And that's something, I don't know if we want to talk a little bit about the Greater New York Project, but our next endeavor is together in terms of this system of support and building this network even further in terms of what's possible as a patron or a collection, is we are inviting a collector to, or patron to come in and actually support the project that Ryan's doing at Greater New York in a very open way. So instead of the work being produced for an exhibition in a museum that may be acquired beforehand or during the course of the show, and they would be listed as, you know, on the credit line on the wall label, we're actually engaging the idea that the collector can really collect the experience of being involved in the support system around how Ryan is organizing this project for the next 6 months at the museum. And so there will be an opportunity for someone to lend their support and also their name and support in a way that we haven't quite seen. So I don't know if you want to talk a little bit also about that, but we really have an idea that that this can really open up a couple of issues that have just happened as a result of Ryan doing what he's doing. He's had over 80 people basically collaborate with him on these projects for free. And, right. You know, at Greater New York, there's going to be, you know, at least another 80 people probably who will come every day and be a part of a, you know, lesson that Ryan is, you know, a student of. So we want to these people to for their basic you know expenses to be covered in the process of doing this. So it's not really talking about performance art and how it's valued by museums and giving artists financial resources to produce projects and how that needs to be honored. Truly, that is the case. I think we all can acknowledge that. But it's more that it's coming from a very kind of open, positive gesture of. If we can get people talking around the value of performance in space, in institutional spaces by finding somebody from the outside of that institution to come in and patronize the project and participate in that way, then we get to open up the field and talking about, oh, we're giving these resources to the performers and the collaborators with Ryan on the project. And, you know, that's giving us a lot of opportunity to not only give back to them, but also to talk about this kind of selflessness in performance itself and how it occupies the institutional space. You know, when, you know, if you had a painting that was going to the Whitney Biennial, you know, or a project, you know, your production might be covered and certainly any of your expenses would be covered. But if it's a performance, oftentimes there's just such a small amount of money that's devoted in these budgets for these things to happen, but they're vital to the institution's programming. So the idea is to eventually, long-term, get to a position where performance artists are, you know, on par with dancers and other forms of live movement in terms of being able to viably continue doing what they do just based on on the immateriality of that performative event, and, you know, and being able to kind of develop a real practice around it instead of it being some sort of financial and personal sacrifice that not only involves them but involves their collaborators and people that want to participate with them as well.
Right.
So that's what we are seeking to do, is we're going to cast and be in conversation with a collector that would basically step up to the plate and say, I want to support this Greater New York project, and I'm you know, happy to be the patron.
So yeah, going you know, back a couple hundred years, less the collector model, where, you know, I buy some fancy ephemera from a performance artist, you know, like some Marina Abramović, you know, knickknacks or something that she had, you know, and house those and then show them at my cocktail party.
Yes.
But more along the lines of, you know, the older patron model, where I would come, you know, maybe sit in the front row and say, you know, I helped create this thing.
Exactly. I mean, it's moving backward and forward, right? So you have the old model of patronage, which can be drawn on and updated. You also have, you know, what, you know, that generation with performance documentation. Then it moved into video and edition and photography and editioning those works. And that's still a viable option for performance, but it shouldn't be completely dependent on the residue of the performance itself. Mm-hmm. I think that the idea that one could actually be a part of the creative process of the performance and the experience of the performance is as valuable as the, you know, the edition of 5C print you might acquire as a result of that experience, or, you know, the video that's, you know, documenting the process and a time-based kind of relationship with the performance, where that sort of starts to become the work. And then you have to remember that there was a live event, whereas this is keeping alive the idea of this live event. And that's something that I think is the future.
Question for both of you. All right. You come up with a performance. You know, a collector loves it, right? Absolutely loves it. It's going to give you fistfuls of cash for it and wants it to be something that is, you know, long-range performative as well, where you would give tours or something along those lines. The only problem is you think he's an asshole. You know, you can't stand his fucking guts. And then you're chained to give him, like, let's say, a 10-year window of performances. Would you go with that? Is it dependent on you being friends with this collector or patron or what have you?
Well, that's a nice thing about working with Elizabeth, is that she would never introduce me to that person. I mean, we're asking for someone who, you know, is buying a piece that they don't get. You know, they don't, there's no object at the end that they get. They kind of have to be a little bit cool. You know what I mean? They just have to sort of, like, just like going into that, like, you don't get to show it off. You don't, you know what I mean? And so this is someone who has a, you know, we're looking for someone very specific. We're not just, you know, like, you know, trying to sell it to the first person who can, you know, because we're also not talking about, like, giant sums of cash. You know what I mean? Like, we could get the money, but we need someone who's willing to really be, like, a participant and a collaborator in it, who, like, can talk about this. If someone says, wait, so you bought a work of art, but it's not in your living room because it doesn't exist in that way, I want them to have an answer. You know what I mean? And I think that because they're part of this project now. And so it's about finding the right person who can be part of the project, you know, and because that becomes part of, you know, that does become part of it. As much as, you know, another collaborator, you know, one of the people who are coming out to Greater New York to teach me how to dance. You know, I mean, they're coming, they're bringing their resources.
I saw your booty dance, by the way. It needs a little work, but it's coming along. It's coming along.
Which were you there?
At the opening,
yeah. Yeah, no, that was embarrassing.
You're doing good. You stick with it.
it was fun. You know, basically the piece, it's called Make Ryan a Dancer. And I'm there pretty much every day of the show, which is, the show is up until mid-October. So I'm there every day, and I have different dance dancers and choreographers coming in to teach me how to dance. It comes out of a very, you know, basic thing that, you know, I work with dance a lot, and I've never taken a dance lesson in my life. So just even things like the vocabulary around dance, I don't know. And so I'm working with these dancers, and I just don't know this stuff. I also, you know, I use dance on my own body in my work. And, you know, because I have not explored other avenues of movement, I'm kind of stuck with the vocabulary, the body vocabulary that I was kind of born with, you know? And so it's really trying to kind of push that, you know? I mean,
Are you getting better? Do you feel?
Let's see, how long has it been? It's been 2 weeks. I think I've made some progress. I've had two lessons with certain, like, you know, the booty dance teacher came in on Sunday, and, you know, yeah, I, like, there's just certain things. Also, my body, like, gets it a little more, you know, really, like, for the booty dance. It's really like your...
Because the hip movement is amazing.
And yeah, well, your ass is basically disconnected from your body. Like, that's really how you have to think of it. It's like, it's its own entity. And so, like, you know, someone says that to you in your first lesson, you're like, what? And then you kind of get it. You're like, right, it's, like, not part of me. Like, you really almost, like, take everything you can in your body. It's really bad for your back. So tip your strippers well. Is you really have to, like... disconnect, push your entire body to disconnect your ass from your body.
Right.
Everything.
Right.
And so you go home, you know, it's not sexy at the end because your back hurts. You're like an old man.
Where's that tiger bomb?
Yeah, right. But, so, you know, like there's been progress so far. You know, I also get, as the project goes on, I get more nervous because, you know, the end, there's actually, this involves two performances. One is called Make Ryan a Dancer, as you can tell, like, literal things. And then the second part is called The Finale, which is on October 16th, which is the last day of programming of Greater New York. And basically it's, I'm going to do a museum-wide extensive piece of choreography that would have been impossible for me to do on the first day of Greater New York. So I've said that sentence that I just said a bunch, explaining this piece. It wasn't until I actually started having dance lessons that it sunk in that I'm doing a solo for an hour with a huge audience. And when, you know, I'm in a dance class and someone says, you know, like, they give me sort of three steps to do, and my brain can't handle it, I'm like, oh my God, what did I get myself into? I've gotten better, and I've gotten way more nervous. The it's really becoming real to me that I am doing this, you know, and it's no longer just this conceptual thing that I'm doing. It's real, you know. It's like, oh, my legs can't do that right now. Will they ever be able to do that? You know, I mean, and so in a way, it's like, you know, I mean, people talk about that. I always find it a little bit cheesy when people talk about this in these terms, but it really is real that, like, my body is this sculpture that's being developed over the course of Greater New York that's unveiled. Basically, the final product is unveiled on the last day of the show, and then it closes. So, I mean, actually, in relationship to what Elizabeth was saying, you know, these people are fantastic who are coming in. I mean, really stellar choreographers and dancers are coming in who, you know, have been the companies of Merce Cunningham, who... David Halberg, who's the one of the principal dancers at American Ballet Theatre. You know, really fantastic people are coming in. And on a very practical level, I would just love to be able to, you know, pay for their cab. You know, I mean, we're not talking about anything extravagant. You know, we're just talking about something that will just make their day. They have given something to me.
Right.
And I just want to, you know, at least start off with a symbolic gesture. What you did today for me, I am grateful for. And we have, you know, created a system in which I can now just give you something to make your day a little nicer.
Right.
And so this is where, you know, the conversation that that Elizabeth was talking about comes in, about finding someone who, that, you know, this piece is not necessarily going to make the best 20 by 30 C print on your wall. You know, it's 4 month P, you know, so it's not, you know, it's not one of those performances where you have this image that you'll just, you know, sell an edition of, blah, blah, blah. But I really think, and as I've been at PS1, it's a really exciting project. I mean, I feel so lucky to be a part of it. It's, you know, and so it's something that I feel like, you know, I don't want to be tied always to making performances that make a great C print at the end.
Right.
You know, so I can then pay my collaborators. That's great. You know, I mean, I am lucky that I have some performances that, like, have great images. I have nothing against great images. I love, you know, beautiful images. But to kind of feel that you're sort of tied to that when you're making performance. You know, I mean, if you get a great image at the end, great. Wonderful. What a bonus. But that's not the piece. You know, that's like, that can become part of the piece. But to you know, I don't think in terms of a photographer. You know, I think in terms of as a performer. And so to kind of have to go into each project with that in mind is just backwards, you know, for someone like me. So then you're turning, you know, you're really having to redefine what it is to collect, you know.
Well, I look forward to watching your ass become disconnected and seeing the full trajectory of what it can do on its own. Thank you both so much. My name is Zephyr Thrall. You're listening to Frank Prattle. And my special guests today have been Ryan McNamara, very gifted artist, and Elizabeth D., very gifted dealer and gallery.